Have you ever had aspirations of pursuing your design dreams and becoming an architect? It looks really cool in all those rom-coms and sitcoms. We're joined now by Gerald Matthews from Matthews Architects to speak about how you could pursue that passion. Good morning.
Morning. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Now, what about architecture drew you to it?
It's got to be the trendy pens and the and the fashionable wardrobe. There's a lot of architects in movies and TV shows and some more famous than others, like the Brady Bunch. And I think I just grew up with this idea that, you know, if you wanted to build things, but you also wanted to design things and you wanted to get your hands dirty making things, that architecture was somehow the trade for it. And it was for me the perfect balance between, you know, enjoying working by myself quietly away on something, but also, you know, engaging with clients. There's not many professions that have that kind of balance. So it's a profession of balance. I guess that's what made me want to study it. And then when I studied it, I realized I really liked it. And then when I started practicing it, I realized I probably would never do anything else.
Now, when you say practicing it, I mean, there's you know, a couple of images of the architect that come to mind. You know, there's someone standing there with the desk that sort of is a little bit slanted upright that you're sort of writing on. And then there's yep. someone wearing a hard hat in the building. I mean, which are the parts that are, you know, the most exciting for you and the most yeah. interesting?
Well, all of them are very true. And those two parts probably still only make up maybe 10% of the job. So I probably spend about 5% of my time on a drawing board, if I'm lucky. And I probably spend about another 5% of my time on a construction site. And the rest of it is figuring out what you need to build on the construction site and what you need to draw on the drawing board. So it's conversations and meetings and a lot of work on computers now. I like them all equally. And you kind of have to, otherwise you gravitate towards one more than the other. So if you really like to draw, become an illustrator. If you really like working with people, become a radio host, maybe. if you really like doing millions of different things that all are only related by the lines you draw, architecture is probably the right field.
Now, you mentioned there the traits that drew you towards architecture, but what about personal traits do you think draws people to architecture?
Ooh, I think a lot of people start the study of architecture because it's a very heavily studied field now. A lot of people start it because of the image of a very self-confident architect wearing all black with very designer glasses, and it's a very stylized profession in that way. In the same way that, you know, people see a doctor walking around a hall with a stethoscope around their neck and a white coat and think, I'd like to be that person one day. A lot of professions have that image. Same thing with rock stars, I guess. You see someone with tattoos and a neck bandana, you think, that looks right for me. So it's the suits and trappings that tend to attract people. But the ones that really stick with it and pursue it, because it's a long road to get there, are the ones that are not interested in architects. They're interested in buildings. So if you ever find yourself on holiday or just waiting in your doctor's office and you just find yourself, you know, staring at the ceilings and walls and light fittings and wondering what's behind that, and if you find yourself making a mental map of a house or a building the minute you walk into it, then this is probably the right profession for you.
Now, what's it like having to, part of the creative process? I mean, if you're writing a novel, you'll get total control over it. You can put your characters wherever you want. If you're drawing a picture, you get 100% control over, you know, the final product. Architecture is not quite the same way. There's always going to be compromise with what the client wants, with what's, you know, feasible economically or even just possible technically. How does, you know, having that sort of set of limitations to your creativity sort of, you know, change your mind and adapt the way you work?
And it's really by reframing the question. That sounds like such an architect thing to say. The idea is to not think of your client's brief or gravity or their budget or the time frame as constraints. They're the very things that bring about the project. So really good design doesn't come from railing against the constraints that are set. They come in response to them. There's a subtle difference, I guess, in the way you think of it. So the idea that a you might have a brilliant idea for a building, but it might not be right for this site, or it might not be right for this client. So you keep it in your filing cabinet, and 20 years from now, maybe someone will say, I really want to do something like this, and you'll say, I actually have already had the perfect idea for you 20 years ago. I did a design for a reception space for an advertising agency in Melbourne very early in my career, and it's still sitting in my drawer because it wasn't right for them. Didn't suit the layout that they needed, so we went with something else. But I've still got that design sitting in my drawer, and I'm still so proud of it that one day someone's going to walk into my office and say, I need to refurbish my reception area. And I'll be like, I think this might be the one. I've already got your design. It never really works out that. I completely expect I'll finish my career with that drawing still in my filing cabinet, because every design really is a response to a client's specific brief, their personality, the organizational needs, the budget, gravity, time frame. You have to embrace every one of those as not just a constraint, but a prompt for the right answer.
Well, constraint can be useful. You know, when you're sort of acting creatively, you know, if you're sort of in front of a blank page, it can be kind of scary, and then you realize that you have a limit. You know, each of the separate corners are the limits. I mean, what are some of the ways in which you have worked within some specific limits and overcome them, or, you know, had them help develop your own thinking and work?
Site boundaries are probably the most obvious answer. So anytime you're designing a building, there's a legal ownership of land, and your building has to sit on that. Now, there are cases where occasionally you'll push that boundary a little bit, and you would never just push it arbitrarily to say, well, we need more land. It would be for a design goal. A good example of that is there's a project we did on North Terrace, which hasn't been built yet, but it's the refurbishment and redevelopment of that beautiful red brick building opposite the War Memorial. It's at the moment empty. It's been empty for quite some time. And sometime coming up, that building will be refurbished, and part of the new structure will actually overhang the old structure. So the idea of pushing and asking for a bit more space from the public realm is one of those examples where you start with a constraint, and you might find the right point at which you lean away from it and then you lean through it. Again, that sounds like a very architect way to explain that. Essentially, what you're doing is pushing the boundary of a constraint, but you've got to have a good reason to do it.
Mm. We're speaking with Gerald Matthews from Matthews Architects about the potential for following your passion for architecture. Mm. Now, when you were sort of briefly telling your own story of your path into architecture, you mentioned that, you know, the further you got into it, the further you found you had a passion for it. Now, Was there anything, I think often people, when they find a passion, there's something surprising about it that actually draws them further in. There's the initial attraction. Was there something like that for you?
For me, it was wanting to know how everything goes together. As a little kid, if something broke around the house, I would instantly pull it apart to find out how it worked. And I would encourage everyone who's, you know, got a thought in design to do that. Understanding, needing to know how everything works is a sort of fundamental premise to wanting to design things. So, you know, we'd have a telephone break and I'd want to pull it apart and figure out, well, how does a rotary dial phone work? For everyone at home who's under 30, Google rotary dial phone. But I'd want to know how the mechanism worked. How did it make a noise? How did it get electricity? Like, what's going on inside the phone? And the same applied when I started being fascinated by buildings. I wanted to know what holds the wall up, how does the ceiling work? Like, what holds the lights in place? How do they get their electricity? So how do all of the systems that go into a building work? So I was fascinated by the complexity of the machine that is a modern building, and buildings are a lot more complicated than they were 500 years ago, when they were really just glass, if you're lucky, and stone, and more stone, and maybe some wood.
What's the simplest thing? I always like to reduce stuff right down to its bare bones. I mean, what is the simplest possible design that you could get away with? And I don't mean get away with as in like sneak it under someone's nose and they happen to build it. I mean, how much can you reduce a building to?
I would call myself a modernist. I don't only design with a modernist aesthetic, but I tend to gravitate towards that. And the idea of that is you're stripping away anything that is ornamentation. You're going for powerful spaces that are powerful not because of how decorated they are or what their materiality is, but powerful because of their scale, proportion, position. So the stripped back space can be a really powerful human experience, and there are great examples of that around the world. There are great architects like Mies van der Rohe was probably one of the first sort of post, I'm going to call him a postmodernist, because he had this rich materiality but these very simple languages of form. So the least you can get away with in terms of a space has everything to do with the people who are going to be in it, understanding the scale of a human. So, you know, if you're a young architect or an aspiring designer, there's a few things you should find out about yourself, like firstly, how tall am I? But more importantly, what is my eye height when I'm standing up? What's my eye height when I'm sitting down? What's the scale of space that feels confined? What's the scale of space that feels large? And that changes depending on the type of person and the number of people and what you're doing in there. So I'm always fascinated by those design responses that have to do with the idea of how do you shape a space to create the feeling you're trying to create? Because whatever space you've created is going to affect the way people feel.
In the event that someone's listened to this and they've sort of maybe unlocked, they go, oh, you know, maybe I should be an architect. Maybe these traits do follow me. This sounds really interesting. You probably already have an answer for this, but what sort of advice would you have for a potential aspiring architect?
Well, beyond pull things apart when they break, and if you can't fix them, it was still worthwhile. There's a set of skills that are necessary, and you don't need to only develop them through the study of architecture in a university. You can develop them yourself. One is be good with a pen. Now that is practice. If you've ever met an artist or a someone who's great at drawing, they weren't born that way. If you look at every 2-year-old or 5-year-old, if you look at any art class in a primary school, everyone's got skill. Everyone's at the same level of proficiency. You look another 10 years later at the same group of students and you might find one that is fantastic with a pen. And you might find that the others aren't. And the only difference will be how much time did they spend with a pen in their hand. So if you're interested in design, a pen or a pencil is your first tool. And it will probably be your last tool. It's the most important thing that you will need to get good at through your career, is explaining yourself through lines and shading, but mostly lines. So get good with a pen. It's a hard skill in the sense that, you know, it's not about interrelations between people. It's about you and a thing. The next advice I would give is understand scale. So know how long your arm is, know how long a desk is. Measure the spaces that you're familiar with because they'll become the benchmarks by which you judge other spaces. You know how much space each of your things take up. And what you'll probably find is that almost everything when you measure it is smaller than you thought it was. It's a phenomenon of if you carry a tape measure around, and a lot of architects really do have a tape measure in their bag. I don't today, but I usually do have a tape measure in my bag. You'll find occasionally architecture students or architects just for no particular reason pull out a tape measure and measure something that's right in front of them because they're trying to test, you know, in terms of design, would that fit within the type of space that's in my mind? You want to know how big things are, particularly relating to human scale. Those would be the main pieces of advice. The next part would be find a mentor that disagrees with you. But a mentor can be a great thing, and they don't need to be an architect. But, you know, if you're interested in design, there are plenty of architects around there who like nothing more than to talk endlessly about architecture and how wonderful it is. So find one, but find one that doesn't necessarily agree with you about everything. It's important, I think, to have conversations that are robust discussions without being arguments or fights. You can have an argument, but, you know, try and stop it being a fight.
Well, that last one, I think, is definitely great general advice for all of us, really. Gerald, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Always a pleasure.
Gerald Matthews from Matthews Architects speaking about the potential for being an architect and why it might be important to follow that passion